Devlin Bishop here with you, and welcome to another edition of Devlin's Pirate Radio Show. And I am happy to be here. I have been enjoying doing these shows, and I enjoy them because of all the great feedback I get. So many people have told me that they just absolutely love that I continue to do these shows, and I'm going to keep doing them. I'm going to try to be regular with them, because I hate when you listen to podcasts and people are always like, oh, I'm going to do at least, you know, I'm going to do one a week. And then after 3 weeks, you don't see them for 4 months. Well, I'm going to be committed to this, you know. I just created a fan page that hopefully you've liked out there. If you're listening to this right now, run and like it, because not only will you get all the latest episodes coming out, but I'm going to try to put some special stuff in there that you can listen to. And it's a great place you can leave comments and stuff. And so I'm going to be consistent with it. I want to handle the serious, everything I do, you know, entertainment-wise, I like to keep serious. So when I say I'm going to drop one every Thursday, I'm going to. Unless, you know, I get sick or something. But you know what? You never know. Knowing me, I'd still be coughing and stuff and still hear talking. Because I love to hear myself talk, let's be honest. Before we get to our first segment, I just want to also say that I got a lot of feedback also on a recent episode that I did where I talked about suicide. And many people said that it was hard for them to listen to. But they thanked me for doing it anyway, because they either have had the same feelings that I went through, or they knew people that have died or went through that situation. And they basically said that they love that I don't shy away from that stuff. And, you know, one guy that I won't name out of respect, he told me that he came very close too. And it surprised me because, you know, this guy, you know, just always seems so, you know, so with it and together. And I shouldn't be surprised, because even the most strongest people that I know may have had that happen to them. But I love that people said, as difficult as it was to hear me, for them to hear that, that they still thanked me for doing it because it was needed to do, and that just makes me feel amazing that I could touch people like that. And so thank you. That's what feedback, I like to hear that, you know, even if you want to share your own experiences. It doesn't even have to be a, I like your show, I love it, or, you know, even if you want to share something with me, I'd love that. Because if I inspired something in order to bring an emotion of any sort, that's a positive thing. Anyhow, my first segment kind of has to do with that. I call this segment, When Did I Become Yoda? This is a statement I've been saying for a couple of months now, and what it has to do with, yes, I'm a big Star Wars fan, but it really has not much to do with Star Wars at all. It's just, there was a time in my life that I always think of myself as the young, you know, ingenue. I always thought of myself as Luke Skywalker. I remember ever since I first saw Star Wars, there's that one scene where he looks up at the suns of Tatooine. Could be the moons of Tatooine. Okay, I'm a Star Wars fan. I'm not a fanatic. But anyhow, and he just dreams of bigger things. And I always thought of myself as that. Even when I was a little boy of 7 watching that, I always knew that I clamored for something more. And so I've always been Luke Skywalker. You know, just off on my next adventure. They may not be as grand and glorious as Luke's, but life is an adventure, and you go. And then about, I would say maybe 6-7 years ago, I never even really seen it until recently. I've had some younger people that have started asking me opinions on things. You know, just asking me about my experiences in life. And I love sharing that and helping them and reminding them that I can tell them my experiences and give them advice, but in the end of the day, it's theirs to decide. I can't make decisions for them. But anyhow, I've helped a lot of people in the last little while, but I can think of three younger guys that have come to me that not only have I helped them with, in lots of ways they have helped me back in return, but they've also become very close to me. And I'm not going to name their names because I don't, that's their business. And you know me, I'm a name dropper, I'm not afraid of it. But let's just say one was a relative, one was somebody I do improv with, and somebody I worked with. And I think these three young men are absolutely amazing, and I'm so happy they're still a part of my life. But each of them were going through different things in their lives. And some were really, they hit a real dark patch. And either they reached out to me, or I reached out to them. In fact, in all three cases, I think I reached out to them. I saw they were in distress, and I just kind of put the offer out there to them to help them. And, you know, I tend to do that. That's just my thing. I don't think of it me as wanting to be some mentor or anything. But then I realized that a couple of them wanted my help. And it was amazing that they did. And as I said, I never went to them saying, I have all the knowledge. What I did is I said, I'll listen. And I think sometimes when people are going through hard times, that's all they really need. Because sometimes when you just talk about your problems openly, you start figuring out the answers. And then when people start giving you advice, it either confirms it or makes you think a little bit more on your situation. But as I said, I would just talk with these people, and I'm not trying to say I'm here for like, that I'm going to start doing this professionally. These are people I really care about, and through the fact that I've helped them out and we've become such good friends, I've come to, you know, really, they're very important in my life, you know. But anyhow, I started realizing that this has become a trend. And about 6 months ago, maybe a year ago, I came to terms with the fact that I used to be the guy who looked for guidance. I used to look for those people that could help me. You know, I need to ask you some questions. Would you listen to me for a bit? And then all of a sudden, I find that I'm the one reaching out to people like, oh, you seem like you're going through a hard time. Maybe we can talk. Or, you know, I might not be able to solve your problems. And I realized that I suddenly had become Yoda. I used to be Luke Skywalker. I used to be the one who needed the help. And now suddenly, I found myself, you know, reaching out to people and wanting to help them, mentor them, and, you know, in some cases, like Yoda, you know, totally screw up my words, like, you know how he does that, do not want, and stuff like that. You know, I fumble all over my words. Hell, if you listen to this radio show, you know I fumble over my words. But I realized that I'm way too young to be Yoda. Yoda's like hundreds and hundreds of years old. I'm only 47. But then I also come to terms with the fact that, yeah, I am actually had a lot of life experiences. And I've met a lot of people that have been through life experiences. And I've carried all that with me. And yes, I do relate to a lot of people's problems. And so it really bothered me at first that I am no longer Luke Skywalker. Now, that's not saying that I don't still like to talk about my problems to people. But now when I talk to my problems with people, I feel a little weird. And I'm not saying that in a bad way. But sometimes people say, you know, well, I'm here for you and I'll listen to you. But I won't talk to them due to the fact that I pretty much know the answers ahead of time, and I feel stupid because once I say it, I realize that I could probably figure this out on my own. And I feel that I'm rambling, and I'm just going in circles, and I don't want people to think, you know, I'm just like this egotistical idiot. So if you see me going through a bad time and you want me to talk to you. But don't take it personally if I don't, because I will talk to people if I can rationally put my head around what the problem is. But half the time, I just go into this dark place and I don't know where my head's at. So to talk would just be like crazy. So anyhow, now I'm the Yoda and I can seriously put together what people are going through. And I love when people ask me stuff, but I always tell them. And very much like Yoda, because Yoda, if you remember, he always led Luke to the right areas, the right places to go, and he would teach. But at some point, he knew that he had to let them go. Let him go and find the answers. And that's what I do. Because I tell them right from the beginning, I won't be able to solve your problems, but hopefully I can put you on a path that makes you think about it, and then you can eventually find your own answers. Yes, I can tell you what I would do in this situation, but in no way do I endorse that that's the right thing to do. What the right thing for me to do is not necessarily the right thing for you to do. So I think all good teachers are like that. I think too many people like listen to people's problem and says, here's what you've got to do. And you know what? In tough love circumstances, I agree. You have to put your finger down and say, this is what you got to do. Or you have to take control. But in regular, just normal, you know, people having troubles, situations, you kind of lead them to the path. Or you become devil's advocate where you show, well, if you do this, this could happen. You could do this, this could happen. I like helping people kind of think and that. At first, I had a problem becoming Yoda. Like, I really didn't like it. And not just because, you know, when I get older, you start finding you get hair coming out of your ears. And that makes me think of Yoda, too. And you know, and my skin is starting to wrinkle a bit. It's bad enough that I'm slowly turning into Yoda a little bit. But now that I've got the metabolism, mentality, not the metabolism. See, I'm stumbling on my words. I love that I can be Yoda. I've embraced my inner Yoda. And I have never thought I'd ever say the word Yoda this much without actually talking about Star Wars. But I love that I have helped a lot of people, even simple talks that don't even lead to the problems. I've heard people call me and tell me that, thank you, just that one little talk cleared my head a bit and made me think better. And that just makes me happy. And these three amazing men are various places in my heart. And the great thing about these three men are that they all still want me a part of their life. In fact, I would say two of them are very close. They will stay with me forever. And the third one, I think, will seek adventures all over the place, but I have a feeling I'm still going to hear from them and still be a part of their life, even in a very small way. And now I've helped some people, and honestly, like 6 months later, you wouldn't even know that we knew each other. Because there are some people that they just want your guidance and that's it. You know, I've had even people really close to me that have called me to ask things and I've tried to be there for them. And I tell them, I'm there for you. Whenever you need me, I'll make the effort. You know, I know we all get busy, but I will try. And then, you know, they get their problems solved just enough and then I never hear from them again. And whenever that happens, I get really pissed off because of the fact that I'm like, you know what? I gave them more than most people give to people. And this is it. I'm not doing it anymore. I'm going to walk away. So whenever you see me talking like this, you know I've had a bad situation happen. And then Mike and some of my closer friends like Corda and stuff, they look at me. They don't even answer because I know what they're thinking. They're thinking, you are still going to put yourself out there. You give it a couple weeks and you're going to see somebody in need and Yoda's going to be reaching his hand out again and saying, if you need to talk, here I will be. And they're right. It's how I've been made. You know, I'm not saying my parents raised me the best way, but they have made a person who gives a damn about other people. And yes, as much as people can break my heart sometime, I will reach my hand out. Because I'm not doing it. I am not doing it out of a sense of, I want to be friends with you forever. When it happens, it's a beautiful, natural thing. You know, in the cases of these three young men, I am so lucky to be a part of their lives. And I'm glad that they've invited me in. And that will mean the world to me. But I don't do it for all that situation. I do it because I just, when I see somebody hurting, I remember how much I hurt. And I just want to send a little hug on Facebook, or a little, you know, if you need to go for a coffee or something. It's just the way I've always been, and no matter how many times my heart breaks, I will sew it back up again and be beckoned for punishment. There might come a breaking point, but I think I would have to be totally brokenhearted. And if that ever happens, I just don't think I'm going to be this guy that you all know and care about. I think it would take a lot, because as much as I tell myself how weak I am, I know deep down inside the strongest thing about my person is my heart. And so I'm going to embrace being Yoda. You know, I can't see me going on to become like the Emperor or something if I continue in my Star Wars transition. If people hurt me so much that I became extreme evil, I'd like to think I can fight it. So right now, I don't mind being Yoda, and I will embrace it, and we'll leave it at that. Okay, we've talked way too serious. It's springtime, it's a great time. I'm going to talk about one of my favorite retro shows that I can sit and watch more times than I care to admit, but apparently I'm going to admit it in the next segment. So stick around, we're going to take a short break, and then we'll be talking TV.
Just a good old boy, never meaning no harm. Beats all you never saw, been in trouble with the law since the day they was born. Straightening the curves, flattening the hills. Someday the mountain might get 'em, but the law never will. Making their way the only way they know how. That's just a little bit more than the law will allow. Just a good old boy. Wouldn't change if they could. Fighting the system like a two modern day Robin Hood.
Yeehaw! You won't hear me do that too often. I may be a big fan of the Dukes of Hazzard, but I don't do that too often, and you can see why. That was absolutely pathetic. Yes, a lot of people are constantly surprised to find out that I am a huge Dukes of Hazzard fan. I have been since I was 11 years old when it debuted on CBS television, 1979. See, I'm almost trying to get into an accent because I started talking about the Dukes of Hazzard, and that's how big a fan I am. I literally start talking like the Dukes. I was an 11-year-old boy, and my friends used to all watch it. It was on Friday nights, and we would watch it. Then we'd take our Star Wars characters, and we would play it. And then Monday at school, we'd all talk about the episode we saw. For those of you who do not know what the Dukes of Hazzard is, before there was the Fast and the Furious, there was the Dukes of Hazzard. And in no way am I saying the Dukes of Hazzard was original. It was actually coming off a big turn in the 70s where kind of redneck car driving movies were really big. Movies like Smokey and the Bandit and Convoy and And basically, you know, these stunt movies would come out, and there was a lot of cars in the local, in the Grindhouse movies. And the Dukes of Hazzard is actually a spin-off of a 1975 movie called The Moon Runners, where they actually turned it into a TV series. It's basically a country show that follows the exploits of cousins Beau and Luke Duke, who live with their Uncle Jesse and their cousin Daisy. And basically, week after week, they just try to get on with their regular country lives. Except that there's this mayor in town, Boss Hogg, who owns the police force, and every week he tries to put the Duke boys in jail. And for those of you who know it, you know it. You either hate it or you either love it. And I love that this show is still popular after all these years. The car they drove around in, of course, was the General Lee. And the first couple years of the show, the General Lee actually got the most fan mail. Kids would write letters to the car. And the car is actually a little bit controversial as of late. Because on the top of the General Lee, it's, of course, a Dodge Charger. It's orange. It's got 01 on the side, and on the top they have a big Confederate flag. And when they redid the movie, when they made the remake, they wanted the company to get rid of the flag. Because the Confederate flag is all about racism, KKK now, it offends so many. But the producers stood their ground and said the General Lee is one of the most innocent things that you could have. And it had a Confederate flag. It's going to keep the Confederate flag because it meant different things to different people at one time, too. The show is absolutely crazy and so formulaic. I don't know why I love it so much. I have lots of reasons. One, there was no show like it on TV at the time. It eventually spinned off shows like, Sheriff of Lobo, Sheriff Lobo, I think it was, BJ and the Bear, like all these other action things. Probably also had stuff to do with Knight Rider. But The Dukes of Hazzard was a show you could tune in and see these amazing stunts with cars flying over stuff. And it was just like nothing you'd ever see. So, you know, kids and their fathers would be watching it. And I think a lot of ladies were watching it because of Beau and Luke. And a lot of young men, I think Daisy Duke, played by Catherine Bach, was probably one of their first bursts into manhood. Probably one of their first fantasies, because she'd had the beautiful legs with the Daisy Dukes, which eventually, you know, were named after her. Because she made them famous. As a kid, I always say Dukes of Hazzard is very important to me because, well, while my male friends were talking at school about how awesome Cousin Daisy was, and don't get me wrong, I thought she was very pretty, but while they were all thinking about, oh, I wish I could, you know, again, I'm getting into this southern accent. I wish I could, like, hang out with Daisy and stuff. You know, we were innocent at the time. We were only 11. And then I remember saying, you know, thinking to myself that, yeah, Daisy was so lucky because she got to hang out with Beau and Luke Duke. And I've always credited John Schneider, the blonde, for those of you who aren't familiar, Beau Duke, as the man who probably helped me realize my gayness. As in, I kind of always knew, I'd say it goes back a bit, but John Schneider kind of threw me into the obvious because every time he was on the screen, I just felt really weird. And it was an innocence. Don't get me wrong, I was 11. I'm a dirty person, but it was an innocence. I wanted to go for a drive with him. I wanted to hold his hand. I just wanted to hug him. But I always just, I credit John Schneider as the one. And if, you know, you ladies out there who know John Schneider, you know what I'm talking about. And he's aged very well. He's been on Smallville and stuff. But besides my gay fantasies coming to life and every other teen's fantasies coming to life, The Dukes of Hazzard was a family-related show. Some people might not know this. I know way too much about The Dukes of Hazzard. I'm telling you right now. I've always said that I could probably hang out with rednecks more than I could hang out with gay people. I just always feel more comfortable with them. Because a lot of them are, you know, they get a bad stereotype of being, you know, homophobic hillbillies. But you know what? I've met a lot of, like, down-to-earth guys that they're so comfortable in their sexuality. They're cool with gay people. And, you know, cooler than some gay people are. And so I actually feel more comfortable. So me being a fan of the Dukes of Hazzard doesn't really surprise me. I still love the Dukes of Hazzard and own quite a few of the series on DVD. And will, like, crank them out every once in a while. A lot of people don't know this, but, and as I said, I do because I know. The Dukes of Hazzard actually started a lot darker. It wasn't set up to be a family-type show. In fact, the first couple of episodes, if you go back and watch season one, they actually make attempts at some dark, dark humor. And, you know, it's still innocent because it was an 8 o'clock show, but it had stuff like when they were going to save the orphanage, Luke didn't seem interested in doing it, and Beau making a comment like, well, I'm surprised you wouldn't want to save the orphanage. Most of the kids in there are yours. And one of my favorite ones is when Daisy's working at the boar's nest, Luke's looking at her ass and basically says, you know, if you weren't my cousin, I think I'd take you out. And Daisy turns around and says, well, that never stopped any of our other cousins. And they actually tried to do more of that sexual aspect and just darker overall. The Duke boys were closer to criminals. Like in the later, not later, but eventually through season one and definitely in season two, they're always usually victims. They're always trying to do something good, and then they're framed. Because they followed a typical formula. But eventually, it almost seemed like the Duke boys would flirt with women, but they wouldn't have sex. You'd never see that. You know, they were always polite boys. And I always thought that was kind of funny, because the Duke boys, come on, John Schneider and Tom Wopat look like men who would be able to, you know, walk into a room and panties would be falling. And I always liked that they played it like they were just like gentlemen and stuff, because I'd like to think there was a darker side to the Dukes of Hazzard once the cameras stopped rolling, because I didn't believe that they were all these G-rated things. I always thought that one of my favorite flukes of the show were, I always thought they always made the stunts bigger, and by like, I forgot how long this ran for, I want to say like 8 or 9 seasons. And what I always thought was the stunts got bigger and bigger to the point where it got absolutely crazy. I just looked it up. It ran 7 seasons. Okay, in the first couple seasons, they would just be jumping little bridges, maybe like a little pond. But by season 7, they literally are jumping barns. They are jumping everything. There was no way this car would have survived. In fact, I think I once read something, they used like about 4 or 5 cars in every episode. They totaled them just because the suspensions would fall. And I knew they literally, okay, there's a term in television called jump the shark, brought on thanks to Happy Days, not because of Dukes of Hazzard, because as far as I know, my Dukes of Hazzard lore, they never jumped a shark literally. But when they actually jumped it figuratively, it was when they actually kind of jumped a helicopter. It was technical, but when I saw that, I knew they were in some trouble. But I always, my take on it was, they were so sexually frustrated that they always had to jump bigger things. It was like their way of orgasming, because they would never show them on the show getting lucky, that the Duke boys would just be driving around, let's jump something, Bo, let's jump, you know. And so my take on it was that's why they had to get bigger and bigger. It's probably good they did stop, because they'd be probably jumping over jets and stuff. And does that not sound like the Fast and Furious? They started off small, and then now you see this Fast and Furious movies. They're jumping cars out of planes. They're doing all this stuff. And that's why I always call Fast and Furious fans probably are also fans of the Dukes of Hazzard. The stories were very simplistic, and some of them just downright ridiculous. And as I said, the Duke boys were good old boys, and always trying to do something good. And Boss Hogg was this evil mayor that, honestly, I don't know why you would stay in a town with a person this evil, but I guess it's for storyline details. But he would do everything to frame them, and somebody wound up in jail in every episode, whether it was Bo and Luke, or if it was Uncle Jesse or Daisy, and it got just crazy. And of course, he had some, people he played off of. Roscoe P. Coltrane, played by James Best. Of course, Boss Hogg was Sorrel Brooke. And he, unfortunately, I just realized that Roscoe had just passed away. I was going through some stuff with Mike. And I didn't know, but I just found out he passed away, which was very sad. Because Roscoe was just an animated cartoon of a sheriff. But he was so good at it. And both him and Boss Hogg were just so cartoon-like that they did the job right. And then, of course, they had a couple of other deputies, Enos and Cletus, would show up eventually. And they were nice, sweet guys. And it was good, because I'm thinking, if everybody in this town is evil except for the Dukes, you know. And as a kid, I learned so much on that show. I learned about moonshine. I learned about, you know, I'm surprised I never wanted to learn how to drive. For those of you who don't know, I don't drive. I don't have a license, never have. But, you know, being a fan of the Dukes of Hazzard, you think I'd want to drive. But maybe, realistically, I'm afraid that that's how I would drive, and being a city boy, it's a lot harder to do. When they did the remake movies with Johnny Knoxville and Sean William Scott, one of my favorite scenes is how they took the Duke boys and put them in modern times, and actually they had to go to Atlanta, and they're actually in a traffic jam, and it was absolutely awesome to see the General Lee stuck in traffic. Because for those of you who are fans of the Dukes of Hazzard, you know that there was always these dirt roads that I swear you'd only see a truck every once in a while. And usually you'd either see a police car, the General Lee, or the other villains that were on the show that week. And the only time you'd see any other vehicles on the dirt roads were if they had to jump them or crash into them. And I always thought, God, as much as the Dukes help so many people in Hazzard, how many people must be furious with these guys because they're always running through their barns or jumping things or crashing their cars into stuff? And I just thought, I would love to see, you know, the neighbors who are almost like petitioning to get the Dukes out of Hazzard. Definitely a fun show. If you are a fan of it, you know why I'm been saying this whole segment with a big smile on my face. In later episodes, they actually started putting really big name country stars, and they'd always use some stupid reason for them to perform at this little boar's nest. And it was just amazing how the show all came together, and it was so, so popular. It was like a pop culture phenomenon for the 7 years it was on. One of my favorite stories I heard was how they got the famous horn. Now, for those of you who don't know the show, the General Lee, on top of all the other awesomeness, you know, the cool car aspect, the 0-1 on the side, the fact that the doors were welded shut so the Duke boys had to always, like, just jump out of it, was that it had this amazing horn that was like, and apparently that wasn't originally meant to be on the show, but while they were filming the first couple of episodes, they were actually filming at the boar's nest, and a car went by with that horn. And when producers heard that horn, they literally got into their cars, followed that car, and basically asked them to buy their horn. And yeah, that's an awesome story. And that became such a big part of the show. The Dukes of Hazzard has one hell of a fan club. They still have Hazzard conventions. And John Schneider, he actually used to spend his spare time making replicas of the General Lee and selling them off to charities. So not only is this man cute, but he's very, you know, nice too. I actually know a friend who said he met John Schneider. He was an extra on the set. And John Schneider literally would come over and hang out with the extras while, you know, some of the other actors didn't. And I was so happy to hear that John Schneider was an absolute gentleman, just like you think he would be. If you've never seen The Dukes of Hazzard, I highly recommend it. But be warned, it's probably got some bad stereotypes in it. I think it still holds up. It's fun. And it's not something... You could binge-watch it, but I think this was from a time where if you binge-watched it, you'd just be like, really? Didn't they just do this plot 3 times again? But, you know, when you space it out, it's a lot of fun to watch. Other notable Dukes of Hazzard spin-offs, after the show was canceled... There was actually a Dukes of Hazzard cartoon show, and for the first little bit, a lot of the actors came back for the original voices. And it was a stupid premise. General Lee driving around the world in a race, and Boss and Roscoe continually trying to stop their efforts. Then they did 2 TV movies that weren't great. The first one got huge ratings because everybody wanted to see what happened to the Dukes. But the second one didn't fail to do well. It was when they went to Hollywood. The Dukes also did an album that I owned as a child. Very proud of that. Where they all did singing. And all of them were good singers. So it was quite nice to see. And of course, Waylon Jennings, who does the awesome theme song that you heard earlier. He had a couple of numbers on it, too. He was also the narrator and the hands in the opening credit playing the guitar. They also did remakes. They did The Dukes of Hazzard. That was kind of an edgier version. I didn't hate it. I didn't love it, but I can still watch it and love all the little inside jokes they do. They also did a right-to-DVD follow-up to that called Dukes of Hazzard: The Early Years, which is absolutely horrendous, but again, I still enjoy it. I'm very sympathetic to the Dukes. And if you're looking for some fun and you happen to, like, you know, go to the library or rent it or see it on Netflix or something, do yourself a favor, watch some Dukes of Hazzard, get some friends together. It's a goofy way to spend. I absolutely adore it, and I'm glad I got to talk about it with you, because I got to stop now, because I could probably do a couple more segments on it. Just haven't even hit the philosophy of Dukes of Hazzard, except for the whole, you know, they didn't get any, so they kept jumping things. That was pretty good. But anyhow, I'm going to wrap it up there. And when I come back, I'm going to basically put an end to some of the gay stereotypes out of there. Being a gay man, it gets offensive sometimes, and I'm going to put an end to all that. That's coming up next.
When people speak of gay Paris, they think that when they say Paris is gay, they mean that gay Paris is gay. It is. Not in the way Paris was gay in yesterday Paris. It means today that gay Paris is gay. Not that gay. They say Paris has always been that way.
Welcome back. I am Devlin. Back for yet another segment. And I like to think about ideas for segments. And, I come up with some and I jot some down. And then I have to sometimes do some legwork on it. And this is one of those segments. That's why if you have an idea, don't be afraid to send it in a comment or something. If I can talk about it, I will talk about it if it's something I'm passionate about. honestly, if it's something that I'm not, don't know much about, I might look into it, or I could always bring someone on that knows more about it than me, you know. But being a gay man, I decided that I would like to debunk some gay stereotypes. And in no way do I say that I am the epitome of gay men, that I speak for all the gay men out there, because I don't, and I choose not to. Being gay is just a small part of what I am, because if I was one of those people that just kind of threw gayness in your face, then that's all I'd be talking about. And over the past couple of shows, I think it comes out once in a blue moon, but this segment is a little bit gay. And if that freaks you out, well, maybe you should turn it off now, but I'm not going to try to conform you in this next segment. Just, I'm going to educate some people on some gay stereotypes. And so, let's see how this goes. Let's start with, yes, being gay doesn't mean I know everyone who is gay. This comes in two forms. One, I will meet someone, and when they find out I'm gay, they're like, oh, I know Ralphie from Sault Ste. Marie. Do you know him? And I'll be like, sometimes I do want to kind of go, yeah, oh, Ralphie? Yeah, he's awesome. But, you know, let's be honest. Just because I'm gay doesn't mean I know every gay person in the world. And that goes for, I'm sure, when people think that all black people know each other, all native people know each other, all Asian people, you know, it goes on and on and on. It's just a matter of thing. And that being said, you wouldn't think that that would be an issue, but you would be surprised how many people do this to me. You know, oh, you're gay. Do you know Philip? You know, well, I may know a Philip, but if it's the gay Philip, I'm not sure. So, yeah. So that's one. The second part of that is, you know, is that actor gay? Do you think that actress might be a lesbian? Again, I can only tell you what I know, and it's pretty much probably what anybody can find out on the internet nowadays. We don't get a gay newsletter. You know, I know some people, you know, say there's a gay mafia. I don't know if there is, but we don't get a gay newsletter to update who has come out and who hasn't. Most of the time, it's basically the same people you saw that, you know, held a press conference or just came out, you know, on YouTube. So that is a gay stereotype I am debunking right now, just because I don't know everyone. And that leads to gaydar. Gaydar is something, for those of you who don't know what that is, it's supposed to be something gay people, and I don't think it's just gay people, I know some straight people who have excellent gaydar, that basically gaydar is that we can look at someone and instantly know if they're gay or not. My gaydar, I would say, is a little out of whack. I can usually predict that this person is gay, but I have had people surprise me, because not everybody acts gay. But I also, the reason I say my gaydar is debunked is because if I see a hot guy that I really like, in my head I'll convince myself he's gay. I'll read every little thing he says or does as gay and probably be 100% wrong. Just because in my own little fantasy world, I want to believe he is gay. At saying that, not every gay person has gaydar. In fact, I know gay people that have horrible gaydar. And then I know some that have incredible gaydar. My friend, Deborah Curran, she has a husband, Chuck Curran, who is probably one of the most manly men you will ever meet. This guy is just like all man. And he has got some of the most incredible gaydar. In fact, he was the one who told Deb, you know your friend is gay. And she wouldn't believe it. Because, believe it or not, I don't walk around as flamboyant as some people think I do. I have my moments. But Chuck, yeah. He's the one who is really good. And I've talked to him about it. And he's just so comfortable with his own sexuality that he just can read it. And I don't think that's offensive at all. I think that's actually awesome that he has that. I wish I had a better sense of gaydar. Sorry, I got a tickle in my throat. Let me take a little drink here. I probably haven't talked this much about being gay in a while. That's why I'm coughing so much. Okay, so another stereotype is that the gay community... I wish this was a better answer. That the gay community is incredibly supportive. When I came out, one of the things I was looking for was that I was going to go to this gay community and they were going to welcome me in with open arms and just treat me awesomely. But like any other community, the gay community is just as fickle as anyone else. In fact, I know I'm not going to be popular with the gay people here, but I find it to be sometimes even more hard. I think it's more shallow, because I find that they really do judge you. And I was shocked by that when I found out. Like, I've tried a couple times to try to become part of the gay community, and they are even more judging than any straight group I have been part of. I actually have more straight friends than I do gay friends. Don't get me wrong, I do have some amazing gay friends, but not as many as you would think. And a lot of them I don't really hang out a lot with, because it's not necessarily because we don't get along, it's just I don't get along with them that much, or it's just, you know, time restriction or something. I have some amazing gay friends. I wish I could hang out with them more. I've always said to Mike every once in a while, I think we need more gay friends. And then I think, why? Why am I even doing this? Friends are friends. It doesn't matter if they're gay, straight, bi, trans, whatever. Friends are friends. And as I get older, I realize that. So it doesn't matter to me if they're gay, straight, or that. But I just wish the community was more supportive. And maybe me giving up on the community, probably they need more people like me, because I'd welcome people in. You know, you don't have to be gorgeous or have an awesome body, have money, have a big dick, which sadly I find that the gay community, those are the things they look for. Personality is so far down the list that saddens me when I'm not judged for, because I don't look, you know, I'm not saying I'm not cute, I'm not gorgeous or anything like that. Or, you know, I don't have abs or don't have a big thick wallet. So I wish the gay community was more supportive. I will not lie. Guys that tell me that I do horrible with women, I can't talk to them, I can't even look at them, maybe I'm gay. Oh my God, when I hear this, this drives me crazy. I have so many gay women... No, take two. I have so many women friends, okay, that I get along with them amazingly. And most of the gay men I know are very close to straight women. So this debunks any idea that because you can't deal with women, you are gay. I hate that that's the automatic assumption, because most gay men I know love hanging around straight women. We get along. We have a lot of the same interests and likes. And if you are having trouble with women, that just makes you a regular guy. You probably are straight, because guys, you know, still think women can be a big mystery. So don't just assume you're gay just because you can't go up and talk to a woman. It just means you're probably a red-blooded guy. So I hate hearing that. I hate when the gay community says that it's your obligation to come out. I hate when people are outed when they're not ready. I think everybody has to have their own time to come out. I came out really nonchalantly. It was a long process, and there was no parade. My family didn't, you know, like, oh, we're so happy you're gay, you know, nothing like that. They also did not turn me away, which I'm thankful for. I think I didn't lose any friends coming out. Maybe the ones I haven't heard from after I came out could be counted as that, but they didn't openly say, hey, I'm not hanging out with you anymore because you're gay. But I don't believe people need to be outed. I think everybody has their own time. I am so amazed when I see young kids come out. Now, whether it's they're lesbian, whether they're gay, whether they're trans, what they're young and they decide to make that big decision, I am so enamored of them because I could not, at that point in my life, I couldn't do it. Like, to wrap my head around it is amazing. So I give them all the credit that they can. But there are some people that wait till later on in life. And I don't think there's a right or wrong answer. But I don't believe that people should be outed. I think they should come out when they're most comfortable and leave it at that. Because it's not somebody else's decision to say when they should come out. Here's a big one I want to debunk immediately. That all gay men, this is kind of a three-parter, maybe even more, but the three I'm going to talk about. All men, gay men, like to shop. And I am speaking mostly for gay men, but I'm sure this kind of fits for lesbians and others. But I can only speak for being a gay man because I am a gay man. I love to shop. So I do fit the stereotype in this. But at the same time, I don't like to necessarily shop for certain things. I know some gay men can talk and shop about shoes forever. You are looking at one of the only gay men that I know of that does not like to shop for shoes. When I shop for shoes, it's a necessity. My runners have a hole in it. I have to buy a new pair of dress shoes. I don't have 80 shoes. I know some straight men that have more shoes than me. And I'm okay with that. I hate going shoe shopping, and I would never, like, call up friends to go shoe shopping, because for me, it's a very personal thing. I'm going to do it, get it done, and then move on. I'd rather shop for toys or DVDs or clothes. But not all men. I know a lot of gay men that absolutely cannot stand shopping. Dance music. Another stereotype is we all love dance music. I, again, fit this stereotype. I love it, but I love other stuff too. If you listen to my, if you open up my list of music on my computer, you're going to see country, you're going to see heavy metal, you're going to see punk, you're going to see rock, you're going to see lots and lots of pop and big band and some jazz. I love so much music, but some people just believe that, you know, gay men just listen to Gloria Gaynor, you know, I Will Survive over and over again on repeat. Don't get me wrong, I love I Will Survive, and I can listen to It's Raining Men several times, but it's not something that every man... I know there are some gay men that absolutely can't stand dance music and hate that they assume that we all like to go dancing. Again, I fit the stereotype, I love to dance. I know many gay men who would rather just go out for a meal or antiquing rather than hitting a club and dancing. I personally could dance anywhere. And the third one in this one is the gay people don't like sports. I think that's crazy. I'm debunking that now. I know many gay men and lesbians and trans that love sports. I am not one of them. This is a stereotype. I am not, I am part of again. I do not like sports. I don't not hate them. Like, I can actually watch them and I respect some. I like hockey and baseball and football, but it's just not something I want to watch regularly. I'd rather watch it live, like I'd rather watch hot guys playing it, and that, so that makes me a bit of a stereotype. But I know a lot of people that do, so to just assume that they don't is just absolute craziness. In that regard, I have seen UFC wrestling. And I have been actually at an event where they played it on a big screen at a bar and saw the amount of straight men that were watching this. And I thought to myself, is this like just for laughs gags? Because I honestly couldn't believe these men were getting into it. And it was the most homoerotic thing I have ever seen. You know, and all these straight men are whooping and hollering. And I'm thinking this is like almost like two men, like, just holding each other, because there's a lot of fighting, but then there's a lot of just them like with their legs tied around each other's head. And I said, I've This looks like gay porn to me. And, you know, these straight guys are like, yeah. And I would say, I don't want to be a stereotype here, but you might want to look into your inner feelings if you're a big UFC fan. I could see myself getting into UFC just because it is amazingly hot. And so if there's any of my straight friends out there listening who want to invite me over to watch a little UFC, I could maybe get into some sports. I'm not going to hear from any of you. I know it. Couple last ones I want to debunk. Oh, this is a good one. I'll sometimes be with a friend, a straight friend, and I'll say, oh, that's too bad when that happens. I'll see a married man or a guy with a girlfriend who my radar is telling me, yeah, that's going to end badly. And they always say, but he can't be gay. He's married. Well, let me tell you something. Just because you're married does not mean that you're not a gay man or a lesbian. And either you don't know it yet or you are hiding from the fact. The term for men who have a wife but know secretly they are gay is called a beard. And a lot of guys do this because they don't want to deal with coming out. But they want to have kids and a wife, and they could be bi as well. It's not a bad thing. But don't, the misconception that just because someone's married, I have met a couple of lesbians, that women who were married to men that left years after. I met a woman in their 60s that realized, I like women, and left their husbands in their 60s to be together. Because they realize that thing. And in most cases, I'm telling you right now, they know. They're just not dealing with it and hoping that it'll all go away. So, that. And the final stereotype I want to debunk is gay people can't be homophobic. That's not true. I have met very many gay people that are offended by other gay people. I can be. I really don't like when young people come out and all they are is gay. Like, they just throw it in people's faces, everything has to be gay. And I respect that they want to do this, but I don't like the young ones that act as if they've invented gayness. And they're just totally disrespectful for their gay elders, and as I get older, I'm becoming a gay elder. So I can get a little homophobic because I'm just like, why? Why are you doing this? For me, being gay is just a small word that I am. It's part of a several thousand words that I am. And because of that, you know, I don't always flaunt it. Every once in a while, I like the world to know that I'm gay, and I'll just, like, I don't care, I'm wearing this, and if people judge me, go for it. But there are other times that I just don't, I don't give a shit if people think I'm that. But what I don't like is that some people don't think gay people can be homophobic, and again, this comes back to the gay community. I think sometimes the gay community can be one of the worst communities out there, and I'm not bashing it in any way. There are a lot of good gay establishments in there, but there is a lot of bad in this, and there are many gay people who are homophobic. It's just the way it is, and so that's another defunct stereotype. Teaching you people a little bit more about gayness. That's why I'm here. Or talking about the Dukes of Hazzard or anything else I feel passionate about. I've come to the end of another show. I had a fabulous time. I can't believe I said fabulous after I'm trying to debunk all these gay stereotypes, but at least I didn't say fabulous! Because, again, another gay stereotype, we don't all talk like that. There are people who do. Do not judge them. They just like to say it that way. Anyhow, I had a great time. Next week, I got another great show for you. Leave those comments. Let me know what you like, what you don't like, what you'd like me to hear. And please, keep in touch with me. Because I love getting that feedback from the audience. And I love talking to you week after week. And I will talk to you again very, very soon. Take care.